This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Hatch might just hang on. Russ rules out a run. And the mild-mannered moderate goes on offense. It's Wednesday, time for a...
Zero Substance
edition of The Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider. Ah!
Every Wednesday, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to recap the week in politics. And after two whole weeks away, he's back and well-rested. Chris Shays and Elizabeth Warren can't resist Washington. They're eyeing Senate runs in Connecticut and Massachusetts, respectively, while Russ Feingold won't run for an open Senate seat in Wisconsin. Utah firebrand Jason Chaffetz won't challenge Senator Orrin Hatch. Veteran Democrat John Conyers escapes a primary of his own, and all the while the president's enjoying Martha's Vineyard. In a few minutes, we'll speak with Iowa pollster Ann Seltzer about the GOP field in the first-in-the-nation presidential caucus state, and later in the program, the signs of early Alzheimer's. But first, we begin, as we always do, with a trivia question. Ken Rudin, welcome back to Talk of the
Nation. Thank you, Rebecca. By the way, I have not seen Neil Conan since the earthquake. Does anybody know if he made it out? Do we know?
He is A-OK, but
he's
thank
okay.
you for asking.
Okay, yeah. I really don't care. But anyway, okay. Well, the trivia question is, yesterday, Johnny Dupree, the mayor of Hattiesburg, Mississippi, won his state's Democratic nomination for governor. He's the first black candidate in his state to do so, which leads to this week's trivia question. Who was the nation's first African-American major party nominee for governor?
Okay, so the first African-American major party nominee for governor. If you think you have the answer, give us a call. 800-989-8255. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org. And the winner receives the fabulous, not-to-be-underestimated, no-prize T-shirt.
Incredible. It's an incredible
honor.
It's
really extraordinary.
It is. It's probably everybody's second favorite choice.
It's a shirt made for radio.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about all the Senate news in just a little bit. But first, it looks like Representative John Conyers could actually get a 25th term.
Well, it's the Republicans who control the redistricting in Michigan, and John Conyers, who was first elected in 1964, he is the senior African-American member of the House. His district was rolled into with another member of Congress, and basically what they decided to do is switch districts, and now John Conyers seems to be avoiding primary from Mr. Clark, and it looks like that Conyers will be returned to office. By the way, I believe his wife, a former Detroit City Council member, is still in prison on corruption charges, but none of that has reached out to ensnare Mr. Conyers.
And he seems to be on his way to returning to Washington, but there are a whole lot of people who have decided they don't actually want to join us here in Washington. The news seems to be who's not running this week.
Well, the big shock of the week is the announcement by Jason Chaffetz, who's a very conservative congressman from Utah, who has said for a long time that he's looking at taking out Orrin Hatch, first elected in 1976.
A primary challenge.
But actually in Utah, it's even more than a primary. It's a state convention. And so even though while numbers show that Orrin Hatch might have beaten Chaffetz in a primary, they have state conventions there. And that's what dumped Bob Bennett in 2010 there, because the conservative activists get together this convention, and they are the ones who decide the nomination. Anyway, Chaffetz said he's not going to run against Hatch. Hatch still has some opponents from the right, and maybe Congressman Jim Matheson may run against him as well. But right now, it's very good news for Orrin Hatch.
And Chaffetz, when he finally said, I'm not going to run, it wasn't the most gracious. It wasn't because I think that Orrin Hatch is a fine senator. It was, he's incredibly vulnerable and someone else will take him back.
Yes, and he said, look, it's going to cost him a multi-million dollar race, and he decided it's not in his best interest. And he did make a name for himself with the battle over the budget in the last couple of months. So Chaffetz wants to stay in the Senate, but it was a surprise, and Hatch really got a big boost with that announcement.
And in Wisconsin, Senator Herb Kohl's retiring, leaves an open seat. Russ Feingold, who was defeated in the last election, has says he will not try to get his job back.
That's a surprise, too. I think he was, you know, the liberals' choice, the liberals' favorite, a big progressive hero there. He was elected three terms before he was, as you say, defeated in 2010. By him not running, he said he's going to continue to teach at Marquette Law School. It looks like Tammy Baldwin, the congresswoman from Madison, who's an openly gay and is getting a lot of money from gay, feminist, and progressive groups. Looks like Tammy Baldwin will be the Democratic frontrunner. And the Republicans have a big problem on their own in that race because Tommy Thompson, the former four-term governor who was planning to run, is being really beaten around by the Club for Growth, the conservatives. They feel that Tommy Thompson's too much of an apologist for the Obama administration. So for all the news about on the Democratic side, Republicans could have a big fight in Wisconsin for that nomination.
One more won't run announcement. Colleen Hanabusa in Daniel Akaka's seat.
Yeah, she's a congresswoman first elected in 2010. She beat Charles DeJoux, as you well remember. She said she won't run. Akaka is 127 years old. No, he's 87 years old. But anyway, Mazie Hirono, who was a congresswoman and former congressman Ed Case, looked like they'll be fighting for the Democratic nomination there. Hanabusa said she will stay in Congress. Other people who also won't run, Tim Pawlenty announced he will not challenge. Tim Pawlenty, the former presidential candidate.
Won't run for president.
He won't run
for Senate.
And he won't challenge Amy Klobuchar in Minnesota. Alan West, one of two African-American congressmen in Florida, said he will not run against Bill Nelson. And another terrible loss for America, Levi Johnston, announced that he will not run for mayor of Wasilla, Alaska. He's going to continue his book on the Palins, his relationship with the Palins. He said because America deserves it.
Well, so Levi Johnston's excuse is obvious and clear there that he's got some other things to do. But these are a lot of people who have decided not to come to Washington. Is there a common theme? Is there something that people are trying to get away from?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, even though everybody says that things don't work and public's view of Congress is at the lowest point in decades, I think everything is this individual challenge, individual decision. I think with Russ Feingold, the feeling was progressives had a good candidate to rally behind, and I think he had enough after 18 years in the Senate.
And there are some people who have made the opposite decision. In Connecticut, Chris Shays is running.
He was a moderate liberal congressman, Republican congressman. He announced he was, I think, defeated in 2006. This is for the seat that Joe Lieberman is giving up. He said he will seek the Republican nomination. But as it was in 2010, it looks like that Linda McMahon, the former wrestling executive who spent $50 million of her own money in that race, looks like she will run again and again. Money seems to be the big issue in Connecticut. And Chris Shays has never been a hero on the conservatives, who seem to be running the Republican Party these days.
And in Massachusetts, the chance to challenge Senator Scott Brown. Tell us about Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren, of course, was President Obama's original choice to head up this consumer advocacy group. He withdrew the nomination because of opposition for the Republicans. She has had her listening tour of Massachusetts. And I think some of her supporters should listen even closer because they had an ad up on Google this week saying, "We must defeat Scott Walker." They meant
Oops.
Scott Brown, but what the heck. But now she has
Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin.
Yes.
Yeah.
But anyway, she's now announced her exploratory committee. It looks like she will announce officially her candidacy shortly after Labor Day.
So I'm sure our audience is wondering why we're not talking about the GOP primaries for president yet. And we are going to talk about that in just a minute with pollster Ann Seltzer. But I want to remind people we are still looking for an answer to our trivia question, which is who was the first African-American to win a major party nomination for a gubernatorial race? Let's see what Jeff in Ann Arbor, Michigan thinks. Jeff, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. I was guessing Barbara Jordan of Texas.
Barbara Jordan, who the beloved and late congresswoman from Texas, made a big thing on the House Judiciary Committee, never ran for governor, never ran statewide.
Here's Phil in Hollywood, Florida. What's your guess, Phil?
This may seem pretty obvious, but Douglas Wilder, who's the first African-American governor from Virginia, would he be the first nominee as well?
You're correct in that he was the first person to be elected, first African-American to be elected governor, not the first African-American nominee.
So we are still taking calls, so still no right answer. The number is 800-989-8255 or email talk@npr.org. You know, as folks are going back to their districts during the recess, there's some rhetoric that we're hearing that might be a preview of things. We've got some tape of Maxine Waters, who in Los Angeles pretty much, you know, rallied the troops with a war cry.
You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
What do you think Congresswoman Waters is doing there?
Well, she's actually, I mean, her beef is less with the Tea Party, and that's not unexpected rhetoric from Maxine Waters, who's always been a real firebrand ever since she came to Congress. But she's also tired, I think, without putting words in her mouth, that she feels that Barack Obama, President Obama, has not been fighting enough, not been aggressive enough, and he's been taking his base for granted. Now, David Axelrod, his Obama advisor, was asked about this, and he said, look, we care about all of Americans, not just African Americans, but Maxine Waters feels that given the state of the economy and given the state of the poor economy with the Black and Hispanic and the urban community, the president is not doing enough, and perhaps this was Maxine Waters expressing her frustration.
Well, it's not just Black Democrats. I mean, Liberal Representative Peter DeFazio in Oregon says that actually progressives there are putting his state in play potentially.
At this point, it pretty much depends upon how far out there the Republican nominee is, with a respectable, sort of someone who would tend a little more toward the middle of the road Republican nominee, he's going to have a very tough time getting reelected.
Well, again, it's the same thing. The progressive wing of the party is nervous. First of all, the latest Gallup poll shows the president with a 38% approval rating. That's a historic low for the president. And usually you need at least 50% or the high 40s to get reelected. George W. Bush had, I think, a 48% approval rating in 2004 when he was reelected. But a 38% is pretty low. And Democrats are really nervous about 2012, which, needn't I say, is a long time from now.
More on 2012 in just a minute, but first let's see if we can get the right answer to our trivia question. Mark in Reno, what's your answer?
Yes, Tom Bradley from California.
And that
ding,
is
ding,
the,
ding.
Wait a second.
I'm supposed to say,
yes, Tom, that is the correct answer. Now, go ahead.
Ding, ding, ding.
That's right. Tom Bradley, the mayor of Los Angeles, was the Democratic nominee in California in 1982 and 1986, the first Black to win that nomination.
Okay, Mark, stay on the line. You will find out all about the details about the fabulous not prize t-shirt that you've won. We will be back with more of the political junkie, Ken Rudin, and pollster Ann Seltzer after this quick break, and you can join us at 800-989-8255 or send us email talk@npr.org. I'm Rebecca Roberts. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. It's Wednesday, which means political junkie Ken Rudin is with us. While everyone was running out of the building after the earthquake yesterday, Ken was busy building a scuttle button puzzle.
Well, actually, there will be no new scuttle button puzzle until after Labor Day, and there'll be a major announcement there because America is really waiting for that. But I should also announce that the last scuttle button winner was Lisa Daly of Syracuse, New York, and the answer to the puzzle was Cokie Roberts. Is that a coinky dink or what?
Yeah, that's what are the odds right there? You can find a link to the scuttle button if you have no idea what it is that Ken is talking about. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation.
Most people don't have any idea what I'm talking about at most
times. In this specific instance, okay. We have a link to explain it. Okay. Otherwise, you're on your own. All right, we are going on to the GOP field for 2012. Republican frontrunner Mitt Romney has been quietly campaigning in New Hampshire, not actually Iowa. His moderate challenger, former Utah Governor John Huntsman, also placing his bets on New Hampshire. Others, of course, paying more attention to Iowa, where the First in the Nation caucuses are less than 6 months away. I can't believe that sentence just came out of my mouth. Less than 6 months away. Just weeks after the Iowa straw poll effectively eliminated Tim Pawlenty from the race, and Michelle Bachmann's campaign has slowed down, Rick Perry's has been gaining steam. We want to hear from our listeners who vote in the GOP primaries. What do you think of Mitt Romney and John Huntsman's strategy to just skip Iowa? Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Joining us now from Iowa Public Radio is Ann Seltzer. She is the president of Seltzer & Company and the pollster for the Des Moines Register. Ann Seltzer, welcome back to Talk the Nation.
Great to be here.
So do you have a little breather after the hoopla of the straw poll?
Well, you know, Iowa was just pulsing with presidential candidates there for a while. So we're enjoying a little bit of a respite.
How has the entrance of Rick Perry affected the field?
Well, you know, I don't have any hard, solid poll numbers on it. I've seen some things that kind of take a little bit of his temperature, and it looks like he can be a strong contender. You know, you sort of look at Michelle Bachmann, who won the straw poll and had a momentary flash of momentum, and Rick Perry entered the race and kind of became a pretty effective drag on that momentum. You kind of ask yourself, what do I get with Bachmann that I don't get with Perry? And I think that's what many of her followers are kind of trying to weigh right now.
It seems that that's what Rick Perry is trying to weigh, too. I mean, he seems to be competing with Michelle Bachmann as well as President Obama.
Well, you want to take on the top of the ticket. That would be Romney and Bachmann right now. And Romney is not really putting much energy into Iowa. So Bachmann is the obvious place to start.
And it's Ken Rudin here. You sound very calm for somebody, given the fact that in 3 days, George Pataki will be in Iowa.
Yes,
you seem very
well.
Calm. The former governor of New York is talking about that. But it just seems interesting to me that for the longest time, we were talking about Tim Pawlenty versus Michelle Bachmann. All the energy seemed to be behind the Bachmann campaign with Pawlenty out after the straw poll. Now nobody's talked about Michelle Bachmann anymore. Does she disappear in because of Rick Perry's new gains?
Well, they're two very different characters. I mean, I have to say that the crowd of people left with Pawlenty's departure looking for a new candidate is small. I mean, he just didn't make much of an imprint here, hard though he worked. I think Michelle Bachmann, she's the candidate of conviction. And so with her group of supporters, I think what they really like is how strident she is, to be frank, about it. And I think they're now kind of trying to take a look and see if Perry can do that and more, that there might be things that Perry could deliver. You know, there's a little bit of a lull. So I don't think anybody's getting a whole lot of attention except for Rick Perry.
And the lull's not going to last long. There was a big a little firestorm going on the other day when Sarah Palin has this event in Iowa on September 3rd, and Karl Rove flatly said on television that she's going to announce her candidacy. And the Sarah PAC people say, look, you're premature. We don't know what's going to happen yet. Whoever's saying this is doing this to hurt her and spread misinformation. Does Sarah Palin have a chance in Iowa? Is there an open welcome mat for her to come in?
Well, you mentioned that Pataki is coming, and he's flirted with us before. Sarah Palin is sort of beyond flirting, but she sort of shows up and she creates a lot of excitement and enthusiasm. And, you know, she draws people who just want to see what she's like in real life. And it's what we don't know really is whether that would translate into support for a presidential run.
And meanwhile, there are the candidates who have decided to just take a pass on Iowa, most notably Mitt Romney and John Huntsman. John Huntsman went so far as to take sort of a crack at Iowa and said they pick presidents in New Hampshire. They pick something else in Iowa. What do you make of that strategy, Ann?
Well, you know, I've done the math on the moderates in Iowa that Huntsman is positioned to attract. And I can't tell you that. I mean, I understand that he thinks that you need to be a particular candidate in order to win Iowa. Well, his image of that particular candidate has a very crowded field. He could stand alone, in theory, and draw moderates to the caucuses who typically haven't played very active roles there. And he may decide that he's going to take a different look. Who knows? There's always, you know, Iowans always welcome the more the merrier.
Well, this is how John Huntsman put it on ABC's This Week about the field.
Right now, this country is crying out for a sensible middle ground. This is a center-right country. I am a center-right candidate. Right now, we've got people on the fringes. President Obama is too far to the left. We've got people on the Republican side who are too far to the right.
So if he's couching himself as a center-right candidate, does it make sense to put in some effort in Iowa to come in second or third?
Well, he obviously doesn't think it makes sense now. I guess my question is if he's got anybody doing the math to see what he could get. You know, I thought the first step was in the debate in Iowa where he not just owned his record, he embraced his record as exactly what he's saying, center-right. There are a lot of people whom I talk to on a daily basis who are looking more for that kind of candidate than they are for a candidate of conviction on the far right.
And yet, Iowa does have the reputation of being a great welcoming mat for social, evangelical and social conservatives. With Mike Huckabee winning in 2008, we had George H.W. Bush finishing third there in 1988. So the reputation of Iowa as being hospitable towards center-right candidates has never been good.
Well, To be sure, there's no question that when Huckabee won the caucuses, that sent a message to the nation about what it takes to win in Iowa. But he was really the lone family values candidate who was left running in the caucuses. So in that case, it was the more moderate candidates that were dividing the field, and he had a chance to be a magnet for the social conservatives who, please understand, were very well organized and showed up in bigger numbers than were expected. It's just that the opposite could happen as well. But it won't happen by magic. I mean, there would need to be some work done in the state for the moderates to be organized to show up at the caucus in disproportionate numbers.
And one more candidate we haven't mentioned, Ron Paul. He got three times as many votes in the straw poll that he got 4 years ago. Everybody seems to just dismiss him as just a fringe candidate, and yet he's shown much more strength than he did in 2008.
Isn't that interesting?
Well,
when I was at the straw poll up in Ames, I mean, you just really saw this fervency for Ron Paul. And when you talk to the media, they were not for, I mean, they didn't get it. That just seemed to be as though that's a dismissible group of people, that he's so radical that while some of his ideas have become mainstream, he as a candidate is not.
Let's take a call. This is Zach in Orlando. Zach, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air, Zach. Go ahead.
I was calling in. I'm a John Huntsman supporter, and I live in Florida right now. And I was just going to urge any conservatives who are listening to this program to really take another look at John Huntsman, because though he's selling himself as the moderate candidate, and it's true that I think he has a lot of appeal, if you look at his record, it's really a pro-growth conservative candidate, and those who are still social conservative, I'm not very strong in that regard, but social conservatives have a lot to love with John Huntsman, and I think he's a guy who can actually win.
Thanks for your call, Zach. That's an interesting message, that the candidate is trying to make himself less conservative than the most conservative, but this is a supporter saying he's actually a secret conservative. Mm-hmm. Let's take a call. Well, no, go ahead, Ann.
Well, one of the things that I think of with the Huntsman campaign is that the most important thing a candidate can do is win. So where is it that he's going to win? If he's not going to play in Iowa, he's not going to win in Iowa. New Hampshire is going to be tough to wrest that away from Romney. South Carolina, I don't think so. Nevada, maybe. And then you'll get to Florida. I mean, that's where he's basing his campaign. I mean, that's where he's wanting to be his base of operations. And I just think that might be too late.
Let's hear from James in South Orange, New Jersey. James, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, yes. I'm a graduate student, and I recently switched in July from the Democratic to the Republican Party so I could participate in this contest. I am a Ron Paul supporter, but I recognize that he will not win, but I think he represents an idea more than the pursuit of the presidency as his goal. To dismiss him out of hand is fallacious, I think, because he's motivating the youth, the young conservatives, more than any other candidate. But between Romney and Huntsman, I would support Huntsman because I think he could win the middle much more easily than any of the other candidates.
And what do you think about his strategy to skip Iowa?
I'm sorry?
What do you think about his strategy to skip Iowa?
I think it's risky, but great success only comes with great risk. And if he loses Iowa, that could take a lot of steam out of his campaign. But just because he's not campaigning in Iowa doesn't mean that his name, you know, will not be present in voters' minds who show up in Iowa. And if he has a fair turnout in Iowa, that could, you know, steamroll potentially into enough momentum to boost him in New Hampshire, which, of course, would, you know, snowball from there.
James, thanks for your call.
The problem I see with Huntsman, though, is that while he makes the case for being a strong and respectable general election candidate, I think the Republican Party is not only more conservative, but certainly much more angry than it was 4 and 8 years ago. Of course, then it was under the tutelage of President Bush. Now it has President Obama and the Democrats in charge. So I think that anger, you almost need that anger to propel you to the nomination. And just as Tim Pawlenty didn't have it, I don't know if Huntsman has that anger that it seems like many Republicans are looking for.
But, you know, what's interesting, you have to factor in the disappointment, disaffection among some Democrats and independents who voted Democratic the last time. And if their anger could be harnessed at their current president, they might be organized for a Huntsman much more so than a Bachman or a Rick Perry.
Or independents who might have voted in the Democratic primaries in the last election might vote in the Republicans this time, because it's actually a contest as opposed to on the Democratic side.
Well, there's certainly a lot of people who came out in Iowa for the first time in 2008, and many of them fell in love with the caucus process. There appears to be, although we don't know for sure yet, little action on the Democratic side. So the action's on the Republican side. An independent can show up that night. A registered Democrat can show up that night and declare themselves a Republican and participate on the Republican side.
And in general, do voters in Iowa prefer lots of candidates, or do they want it to have been narrowed down by the time it gets to the caucus?
Well, we mostly have a pretty wide field by caucus night, and I think that it gives certainly the cafeteria plan that you can see a wide array of candidates and kind of choose the one that makes the most sense to you. I do know that, just anecdotally, that a lot of people do a lot of research and try to figure it out, and sometimes on caucus night they have it narrowed down to four or five.
Yeah, that's not actually narrowing it down.
Well, that's the luxury of living in Iowa, is that you can get rid of a couple or three, and then you can decide once you hear what people have to say.
And you've probably met them all personally at that point,
exactly,
too.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Andrew from Lynchburg, Virginia, joins us now. Andrew, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Oh, thank you for having my call.
Sure.
Hi. I was just wanting to say that there is a huge difference between Mitt Romney and Huntsman for missing that Iowa poll. It won't hurt Mitt Romney to miss it because he's very well known. Huntsman, on the other hand, would only stand to lose, since it is a very conservative state. He's too mainline centrist for it. I think that he stood to lose a lot if he had low numbers like Pawlenty did.
You know, if I could just chime in about Iowa being such a conservative state. As I said earlier, I ran the math on this. We had a governor's primary last year, and the evangelical Christian candidate lost by a rather significant margin, meaning more Republicans showed up to vote in a primary for the more moderate candidate than voted for the evangelical candidate in a one-to-one, head-to-head race. So what we know about Iowa as socially conservative is what we know from the last caucuses. It's 119,000, I think, who showed up for Republicans. If you can organize 40,000 votes, you can win the Republican caucus, no matter what ilk you might be. There are enough votes out there for any candidate.
But, Ann, don't we agree that a more conservative electorate shows up for caucuses than they do for primaries?
They did in 2008.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the things these candidates are saying in addition to their strategy. We heard that clip at the top of the hour about Michelle Bachmann saying she can get gas down to $2 a gallon. Ken Reardon, what do you think of that?
I think that's not likely to happen. But you know something? A lot of candidates say a lot of things. First of all, she said it will be $2 a gallon in a Bachmann administration. So that's probably true, but there will not be a Bachmann administration. What I'm saying is, look, we saw this with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama doing with tax-free weekends when they were trying to outdo each other in 2008. These are the kind of things that people say to get votes. But as John Huntsman said, this is just irrational because it's not going to happen.
And, well, John Huntsman does seem to have taken the tack of taking on some of his colleagues in the race, which is an interesting strategy this early on. What do you make of it?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, a lot of people in the media saying, you know, right on John Huntsman. But when Joe Lieberman was doing this on the Democratic side, that all his fellow Democrats were too far to the left, a lot of Democrats just hated to hear that. And I kind of think that the more that John Huntsman goes on and on saying how extreme and how unelectable his fellow Republican rivals are, I think more and more voters may turn against him. I think running a general election strategy in these early pre-caucus, pre-primary days just may not work.
And Seltzer, I know you're a pollster quant geek, and I don't want to take you too far away from data, but if looking in the next 6 months, what do you think will shift between now and the Iowa caucus that might change the caucus field?
Besides George Pataki.
Yeah, well, George Pataki coming to town, big headlines again. You know, it'll be interesting if he gets in the race. It'll be interesting if anybody else decides that they're going to take a shot at this. If the field looks as though it's not solidified, you know, we're in a window of opportunity here to get in, get the work done we don't really know for sure yet what our caucus date will be. It's right now set for February, but that could move up, meaning there will come a point in time when it is just too late to get into the field. So I would be looking within the next month. I think that's really the end of the opportunity for people to get in and get the state organized that way. And then I think the question is, is there any candidate who will drop out between now and the caucuses? Because they're all auditioning for something. Some of them, I'm not sure that they're auditioning really to be president. They may be auditioning for their next gig, whatever that may be. And if you stay in the caucuses, you stay a declared candidate, you can show up on the debates, get a lot of national exposure. I don't look for anybody to drop out, really.
Ann Seltzer is the pollster for the Des Moines Register. She joined us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and our political junkie, you can check out his latest scuttlebutt puzzle when he gets it around to it, which is not immediately, on NPR.org and click on the Talk of the Nation. Coming up, the signs and possible treatments of early onset dementia. I'm Rebecca Roberts. This is Talk of the Nation.